This week on Extreme E Off Track, we chat with Veloce development driver Heather Husos. Hello everyone, wherever in the world this finds you, in whichever time zone, you are going to enjoy this episode of the Extreme E official podcast, Extreme E Off Track. I'm Freya Brolsma, and if you're like me and love hearing from young athletes about what makes them passionate about their sport and everything they're learning in their journey, you'll be keen to hear from Heather Husos. Heather started in motorsport on two wheels, but quickly learned that double the wheels is double the fun. Having partnered in Sardinia and Chile with Kevin Hansen, Heather completes the youngest driver lineup to compete in Extreme E so far. And she chats with me about what it's like racing against her motorsport heroes. Heather has shown incredible courage and resilience this year, stepping up to race with almost no notice and working alongside multiple teams, not to mention achieving a podium on her very first race with JBXE. But don't hear it from me. Let's get stuck into our conversation with Heather. A big welcome to Heather Husos, who's joining us today from Norway. Thank you so much for joining us on Extreme E Off Track. I heard you had a busy weekend in training. How are you going, Heather?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, really well, thank you. We always love to go straight back to the start when it comes to learning about our Extreme E drivers. So let's go back to a really young Heather. You started on two wheels before you moved to four. Can you talk us through some of your early motorsport memories? When did motorsport first enter your life?
Yeah, I think in the beginning it started with just interest for cars and bikes. I think I've been helping my dad in my early age when he was fixing the cars in the garage and stuff. But and I did drive also ATVs at my uncle's house a lot, and at my parents' house as well. And I remember they had actually like a rope on the ATV, so I couldn't go that fast. But but it started with motorsport for real when I was when I was 15. So I started motocross because of some friends. Mm-hmm. I was always with the boys in school, so I wanted to do what they did. So I watched them doing motocross and driving Polaris and also like normal bikes on the road, like motorcycle. And after that, then I finally got myself a Honda CRF 150 four-stroke. So that's where it all began. And I got the license as well on the motorcycle when I was 16. So and after that, of course, I got into cars as well when I was 16. My dad showed me a folk race in Bergen. My brother did actually drive them as well. He was 18, but he quit because I was faster than him.
A common story, I'm
sorry,
sure.
But it's true,
I'm sure it is. I believe you.
I started with the folk race, and me and my dad actually were building a Ford Sierra. So we actually found a car in my hometown. We were driving actually around my hometown, and I just saw the car standing outside of a house. I was like, that car is so cool, and I want to have that car. So we actually went on the door of the house and just asked the guy if he wanted to sell the car. And he was. So I bought the car for like a cheap price, you know, like a scrap value. And then actually the guy was asking like, why do you want the car? Because it was a really old car, and actually it wasn't a fast car either. I didn't think of that. I just looked on the car and like, wow, you know. So I didn't know anything about it. I just wanted it. So yeah, me and my dad built the car together. So that's where I also got the interest as a mechanic. And me and my dad had many hours in the garage together. So yeah, I chose to become a mechanic after starting with folk race. I went to school for 1 year, and then I had 1 year off, actually on a motocross school where I did motocross. I learned a lot there, and I tried actually enduro as well and some trial. We went to Spain actually as well in Andorra for a month, just riding on the mountain and stuff like that. So yeah, that was a good year. And then, yeah, 1 year as the Finnish year as a mechanic, and then off to a workshop for 1.5 years. So I'm not working full time there now, but trying to make a living out of motorsports.
Fantastic. So it sounds like it's been a real bonding experience with your dad as well. Do you still get to spend those hours in the garage building cars together?
Yeah, not building cars together, but we still have a lot of time in the garage together. I still do a lot of folk race and stuff, so we always work on the cars together. We do.
Fantastic. Yeah, it's not uncommon to find that drivers have had family who've either been involved in motorsport in some way, whether their siblings have raced and you've beaten them as you've come up and refined those skills. And it sounds like your family have certainly been an influence on your passion for motorsport. You've mentioned that your brother's quit because he's been outperformed by his little sister. Is your dad still involved in motorsport?
Yeah, because I didn't came from a multiple family, but I always joined me in races. Like, my dad did some folk race when he was younger, but he had been a mechanic for many years, so he still can learn me a lot and just, be with me with the cars and
So Norway's not unfamiliar to motorsport in and of itself, but it's quite a unique choice of sport, particularly where you're from, I read. Skiing or perhaps even skydiving might have been more common options in that region. How did that affect you when it came to trying to access kind of training facilities and getting support as well as you tried to kind of grow that career in motorsport?
Yeah, it was actually like in my hometown, it was no one else that did motorsport. It was actually just me that did cars. It was someone that did bikes because we had this track in us, but usually it's people doing ski and, as you said, like skydiving and stuff. So yeah, I was the only one that was actually, when I took the license on a car, I would travel all around in Norway and I traveled with the trailer and everything. So yeah, traveled to Bergen. When it was training, so it's like 2 hours from us, like after work. So I was like from work, working with cars. And then after work, I was working with cars. So it's just like cars, cars, cars. And then when it was weekend, I asked the after work if I could go early. And then, traveled to a race every weekend. So, yeah.
And were people intrigued, whether it was neighbours or local businesses, when they would see you travelling off with your trailer and all of the kit I'm sure that you have when it comes to race weekends, they're kind of asking, where are you off to? What are you doing? Were they interested in providing support or getting to understand the sport a bit more?
Yeah, I had a lot of local sponsors and my job as mechanic at a workshop were also supporting me. So it was like when I came there on like a Thursday or Wednesday, on Friday, they were like, are you going to have time off? Are you going for a race again? Like, they already knew, what I'm going to ask.
But for introducing them to new things, that's really cool. So how did you make the decision to switch to kind of four wheels? So you mentioned you kind of wanted to do what the boys are doing and riding motorbikes and were getting involved through that way. How did you decide to give the four wheels more of a focus and take your career in that way?
I think after some years with both folk race and motocross, my interest for cars just got more and more, and I found out that's what I'm gonna do, because like if I was driving motocross on a track, like for a while I could be like, okay, I'm done now. But on cars, I was never done. I want to just do more and more. So yeah, I got never tired of driving cars. So yeah, so then I sold my motocross bike and bought a rollercoaster car. Not the best car, but that was all I could afford at the time. Most important for me was to just, enjoy it and get as much driving as possible.
So definitely somewhere where kind of that true passion lies. You never want to get out of the car. Just keep going round and round the same track. What do you feel like are some of the kind of the biggest challenges when it comes to getting involved in motorsport, particularly for young women in Norway?
I think when I started, when I was 15, it was actually 3 girls. So I actually haven't felt so much problem with that. I think just been more and more girls. So it's been like normal for me to drive with the girls, I think. So it hasn't been like a big thing, especially not in Bergen and with folk race and But mood course it was a bit when I was, but I was used to be with the boys, so I didn't think of it like that. I did ride with them, and I was the only girl at that time when I was 15. And then when I did at the school, it was also 4 girls. So I think, yeah, it's less girls, but I think it's great that it's still girls. So yeah.
Excellent. And you mentioned that you've been racing in Andorra. We were, James, who I co-host the podcast with, you probably heard before as well, was there to see Christine GZ racing in Andorra. Must have been earlier this year. I have to ask, have you been there racing when they've got the ice racing happening as well, or are you there at a different time of year?
No, we were actually there at a different time of year. So we were in the winter in Norway, kind of the beginning of the winter, and then it was warm there, so it was to get away from the snow, actually. So.
I see. Is that something you've had much experience with as well, in terms of just those different conditions and experiencing going sideways in lots of different weather situations?
Yeah, I've been a lot on ice driving with cars, and bikes I did a little bit on the mountains, like enduro in the snow and just playing around in snow because it's slippery and fun, you know. And then, but most cars in the snow and on the ice. So. Yeah, you know, always when it comes snow and in my whole town, like at home when it comes snow, it's like fun to just go out with the car because you know it's going to be slippery. Just like pull a handbrake a bit. Oh,
Just doing some practice in the drive on the way home then.
Yeah, off to work and home for work, yeah.
How good. So let's have a bit of a chat about Extreme E. Obviously, it's what we're here to talk about when it comes to the season that you're involved in at the moment. But let's take it back to when you first got involved with Extreme E. You've had a bit of an eventful experience already with this racing series. Can you first of all tell us about how Veloce found you? So obviously, you're a Veloce development driver. How did they find Hedda?
Actually, it was a bit not random, but or actually was kind of, because when I saw this opportunity in Denmark, driving for a team calling my promotion in rollercoaster. So I went on a race at the end of the year in 2021. And I actually got a call from this English scary man, Ian Davis, if he was interested in Extreme E. I remember I didn't understand, I didn't cost anything. I was like, I don't know if I can afford it. And I was worried about that and was thinking, it's a trap, like this can't be true, you know. But yeah, after talking to a lot of different people in Norway in motorsport, I believe it. And in Denmark, Ian came to the race and watched me race. And remember, I was enough scared of the race in Denmark to just do the race. And then this manager shows up and I was like double nervous. So but it went all good. And he asked if I wanted to do a test with the Extreme car, the rookie test in Sardinia. But the test in Sardinia didn't work out because of, the crash Sorensen had. And, so I got a new opportunity then in France, in Vincennes, and the test was good. And, I got a contract with Veloce as a development driver. So, that's where the my Extreme journey began.
Well, I'm glad that you've learned that Ian's not just a scary man, but actually telling you about some amazing racing opportunity. And it is real. It doesn't feel real all the time sometimes. I think when we are at home and we're watching these amazing cars driving in, the most remote places in the world, it doesn't feel real all of the time. So perhaps that's a good first experience with the sport. But as you mentioned, you joined as reserve driver with Veloce, and you had that nomination to take part in the rookie test, but after Sardinia didn't get to see that through. Did that feel like a bit of a setback at the time, or did you know that you had more opportunities in the car ahead of you? How did you respond to that just initial kind of setback, knowing you wouldn't get to be in the car when you thought you might?
Yeah, I was ready to be in the car, so it felt a bit like, oh, okay, then what happens next? But I think when I was there with Lance as well, because we were both doing the rookie test, it felt a bit like he was like, yeah, we're gonna do a new test, no worries, like, so I had someone to talk to. So I didn't think so much about it. I just like, it happens in motorsports, you know.
Yes, indeed. And in other sports as well, you know, there's always going to be those moments that moments of disappointment, but there's always more opportunities. You, as you mentioned, when you came into 2022 season, you were announced as the guest championship driver for the Desert Esprit in Neom, I think it was. So that was alongside Romain Dumas. When you're a championship driver, obviously you fulfill that role of being a backup driver for other teams, but you have other responsibilities when it comes to advising for the championship. What does that involve? So can you talk us through what the advisory nature of the role of the championship driver is?
Yeah, it's kind of because it was like the last minute actually to be the research driver because Tamara was taking over for, Exide. So I was actually not supposed to. We were actually in Dubai doing some training in the dunes with Veloce. And then I was back home for one day and I got the call that you need to come back because you have to be a research driver. So I was like, oh, all the way back. And then, came back to Saudi Arabia. And,
wow.
And have this title was really good as well to just have the title as the Extreme E reserve driver. And for me, I didn't think that it was going to happen anything. Like, I was thinking, like, this is good to have a title and we can learn a lot and I could see more things and, get to know people more than just Veloce and stuff. And then suddenly, actually, I got the opportunity after all.
Yes, definitely. So let's talk about that. So things changed for you very suddenly. And actually, first of all, what a whirlwind, you know, being in Dubai, coming home for one day and then back over, goodness me, you wouldn't know what time zone you're in. But yeah, as you mentioned, things did change very quickly and suddenly in Saudi. Unfortunately, Christine GZ had that terrible crash and you were called up to make your debut. First of all, what was going through your mind when you got that call? You've obviously seen there's this big accident and now you're about to get in that car. What was going through your mind at that point?
Yeah, I had so many feelings when it all turned around. GC rolled the car and I could see that she was hurt, but I never thought that I would drive. I was thinking they couldn't fix the car or she would be great. Like, I don't know. So when Ian told me that I had to get ready for the crazy race the day after, I remember I was super nervous and terrified to not be good enough and everything with the little experience I had in the car. So, and just get right into the crazy race. Crazy. So I had a lot of time at the hotel with Lance, just going through the track and writing up all the little things from the track and watching on board over and over again. And Lance helped me a lot there. And so I felt okay in the morning. I mean, okay enough. I had much more confidence. So I was ready. But then, in first year, it was a failure on the steering. So I wasn't possible to drive the way I wanted to. So.
Right. So, and you mentioned those feelings of kind of thinking, oh goodness, am I good enough for this? Do I deserve to be there? How do you overcome some of those thoughts?
I think actually after on the hotel when I was going to the track with Lance, it actually helped a lot to just when you remember the whole track in your head and you can just go through the whole track and just when you know it, because then you are sure what to do, you just have to do it. So it felt better because I didn't think I was going to do it. So it was just like, you have to learn the track and everything and just, and the car as well, because I haven't driven the car so much. So I had to learn all the small things like the buttons, the maps and stuff like that. So it was, it happened really quick. So
not too much time to dwell on it perhaps then. But like you said, you're not the only one to say that it was a bit scary the first time they got in that car, especially even listening to James's recent interview with Timmy Hansen kind of saying the first time he got in that car and their first track said, it's scary stuff. So especially when you haven't had as much preparation as some of the others, I'm sure it would have been pretty intimidating. So you had the chance to do some testing, as you mentioned, in France and then Dubai with GZ and Lance. How important was that time together when it came to then being able to step up in the race?
Yeah, I think it was good, especially in Dubai when we were driving in Polaris because we're driving in the dunes because I hadn't been driving in sand before. It's not like can drive so much in the sand in Norway. So it was a bit new to go to Sverige and do the driving in the sand. So
good practice then, as it turns out, when it comes to those conditions. And what were your first impressions, you know, when you did finally get into the Odyssey 21 and you were driving it for the first time? Obviously very different to what you'd driven previously in the driving that you've been doing prior to this. What were your first impressions of the car?
Since I've never done any electric cars, it was a bit weird when it's really quick and it does like, it's on and off, if you know what I mean, with the power. It's not like it falls down, like it doesn't, yeah. So it's always like on all the time. So it's, yeah, I really like to drive it. And I think it's a bit weird to, when it was so high, the car is so high that I'm used to sit more on the ground. So it's a bit like, oh, this is big and stuff. But yeah, I got used to it and I really enjoyed to drive the car. So yeah.
Like a high powered monster truck in comparison to something much, much lower, like you said, with very different kind of power in terms of how that would feel as a driver, I'm sure. So as you mentioned, though, when you did get into Crazy Race, unfortunately that bad luck continued for the weekend with Veloce. There was that high impact with the camel grass on Lance's lap, which saw the power steering to fail. What did you take from that experience, though? What did you learn from racing alongside Lance and experiencing the kind of race conditions with the team? Because I'm sure that's very different to just testing with them. What did you learn from that team experience on the day?
I learned a lot. I think it was good, since I couldn't drive as fast as I wanted to, but I think it was good to just be in the moment and, you know, go into the sweet zone and learn to change and to kind of learn everything you have to do for a race in Extreme E and on the race as well. When it was the steering, I also got to know how it is when it doesn't work. So now I know how it is if it's going to happen another time. So yeah, and also to work with Lance worked really well. We work really good together. So yeah, it was good learning anyway. So
like you said, there's camel grass in lots of different places. So you might be ready next time it gets in your way and disrupts that power steering. I can't imagine what it would be like trying to control a vehicle like that with no power steering. It's impossible to me.
Yeah, I was really happy with the power steering because like my arms was like bumping, like what do you call it when you get like a really bump, my arms are like, oh, it hurts, you know, after a while. It was really hard on the bumps when it hit like a rock and stuff. It's just like, yeah, it's not possible to drive any fast with that, no.
No, I'm sure it must have really put a lot of that training that I know you do into action very rarely, in terms of having to just have the, you know, the strength to even control a car like that, but then be able to push through that. You know, it's a very different kind of feeling if it's not, you're not just driving, but actually having to kind of do that additional control. And like you said, it must have really hurt.
Yeah. It did.
But you mentioned that you and Lance worked really well together. And something you guys have in common, of course, is that you're not just drivers, you are mechanics as well. And we saw Lance mucking in to try and help rebuild the car. How much does that additional knowledge and kind of skill when it comes to that mechanical understanding of a vehicle, how much does that help with Extreme E?
I think it's really important actually to, I think it's good to have this experience with the car because when they explain to you, like, for example, if Kevin explains stuff to me, like how the, on the driving, you understand more like why it does that because, you know, oh, of course it does that because, yeah, you know how the car, like the generals in the car, like basics. So, you know, yeah, it's good to know just the basics. And yeah, I think it was good to see Lance working on the car with the mechanics. That's, yeah, I think that's also good to see the drivers do the things on the car as well, to see they can do both. I think that's really good.
Well, very handy for a sport like Extreme E as well, given that so few people are able to travel with the team. It seems like every set of hands is useful. So after Saudi, you had quite a long break to Sardinia. At what point in that, you know, it felt like a really long time for us as spectators, but at what point during that gap did you learn that you would be racing for JBXE, and How did that come about?
Actually, I was not going to Sardinia at all, actually. So I wasn't ready for it. I was thinking, okay, yeah. And then, suddenly I got a call from Ian, like 1 week before the race. Well, like, yeah, I think it was 1.5 or something like that. And then he just called me and, like, you are going to travel GBXC in Sardinia. And I was like, what? No, you're joking. And I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, what's happening now? Why? And, like, I didn't understand why. Because, yeah, I thought Molly had the drive and everything. So, yeah, I was actually in a job in Oslo. So I had to, like, I was actually just saw, like, Ian was calling. I was thinking, like, it's always something interesting when he's calling. So I was like, I'll just go out and then take the phone. And then he said it. I was like, oh my God. And then he said, you can't tell anyone. And I was like, oh shit. And then I had to like be poker face all the evening after. It's so hard.
Keeping such exciting information to yourself is so difficult.
Yeah.
But like you said, always something interesting when Ian's calling by the sounds of things. But your race in Sardinia gave me one of my favorite moments on Extreme E, which was caught on camera so far, I think, which was Kevin's pretty emotional outpouring of support after your lap. I think it was in the semi-final. It was just so wonderful to see that team support, and just you could see how bought into each other's race you were and how meaningful it was that you'd had such an epic lap. You are the youngest driver lineup in Extreme E. What's it like to partner with Kevin, and just how important is that teamwork in a sport like this?
Yeah, I always thought it would be me and Lance that would be teammates because I didn't know Kevin before Sardinia. But yeah, I'm happy I got to drive with Kevin. He's a really nice guy and has the patient with me as well, and learning me all these things in Sardinia when I was so nervous, and to get to know him as well. And I think it was good that we both can speak together in our own language. Like, I speak Norwegian and he speaks Swedish. And that felt a bit more relaxed, you know, so I didn't have to think to translate and all that stuff. So, yeah, came with so much experience as well. And we work really good together. And I think it's super cool that we are the youngest lineup as well, as you said. So, yeah, I think it was great to do my first race in Extreme E with Kevin. So.
Absolutely. And it is one of those interesting parts about, you know, the sport, I suppose, is that we have, you know, not only do we have male and female drivers driving together, but we also have people from all countries in the world and from all over the place. So we have all of those complexities, like you said, having to translate while you're making decisions, which just adds a whole nother layer of, you know, difficulty to this sport. So not only were you coming into Sardinia with, you know, like you said, pretty nervous, didn't even know it was happening, and now you've got a new team and a new teammate, and subsequently with a penalty for RXR actually meant that your fourth place became a third, and so you got a podium in your first race. That must have been a pretty special feeling.
Yeah, the race in Sardinia was good. I really got the third place after the penalty. It was because I think fourth was good enough, and then I was like, sure, I'm going to podium on the first race. We didn't get to celebrate though, but I think on the podium, but I think still good to got the news afterwards, some weeks after we got the news actually. And we were at Hull actually. I was watching I was with Ian and Lance at the race, and also Kevin was driving rollercoaster, so we got the news there. And so it's good. And I think it was in the semi-final when I was leading in front of Carlos Sainz. Was like the biggest moment, I think, of the race in Sardinia. I remember Connor saying, like, the gap behind me. And he said, like, Carlos Sainz, something gap behind you and closing in. I was thinking, like, why do you say Carlos Sainz? Can't you just say the car behind? Like, no worries, Carlos Sainz just behind you. Like, but yeah, happy I managed to keep him behind, though.
Wow. What's it like? You know, like, you've brought it up, so let's talk about that for a minute. You've got Carlos Sainz Sr., you know, Sebastian Loeb, Nasser Al-Attiyah. We've recently seen he's obviously added another medal to his trophy cabinet. You know, even Timmy Hansen and Tanner Faust, who used to race against each other as well. You're surrounded by legends of motorsport. And just, I can only imagine just to be driving and then hear that Carlos Sainz Sr. is coming right up behind you. It's not what you need to know in that moment. But what is it like riding, you know, side by side with legends of motorsport as you're growing your own career?
I think it's incredible. Like in, like in Sardinia when he was behind me, and I think to just drive with them as well. And like when I was in Chile when we did the Copper Expex, when Kevin started and I had to go out with the boys in qualifying two, it was a bit scary. But at the same time, I think I was just like, I'm going out with, Tanner and Nasser and Sebastian Loeb, I didn't have an expectation. I'm like, they're going to drive, And then actually it went really well. I was driving really fast, and I think it's so good to be out with them, just like drive behind them and learn from them, because they have so much experience and incredible drivers. So I think it was good to just drive behind them. And I was laughing a bit at the start. I was thinking, like, oh my God, this is actually really crazy, just standing with all the boys out there.
Wow, that just adds to the unbelievable nature of this sport, which we've already talked about. It doesn't seem real a lot of the time. And that might have been one of those moments where it also just a bit unbelievable. You've mentioned, obviously, you driving behind them, alongside them, in front of them at times as well, obviously, and you're learning from them on track. Have you had some time to chat to some of these, really experienced drivers and learn from them off track as well? Have you managed to get some mentoring in along the way?
Yeah, a bit. I'm trying to talk a bit with Nasser because he's, I want to do Dakar, and I think he's one of the greatest drivers of all time. So I think, I've been talking with him, and as well when I work together with Kevin, when he has so much experience, I think it's great that we work together because then, he wants me to be fast as well, so I can learn from him. And I think that's really great with the series, that you can learn from your teammate that has so much experience. So
yeah, like you said, it is very cool. And you mentioned Chile, and unfortunately it didn't quite go your way on that weekend with the campaign ending in the crazy race. But the track certainly looked super fast and really fun to drive. You've now driven at a few different tracks, in a couple of different cars. How do you change your approach? You haven't had a lot of time to get ready for your other races, not knowing that they were going to happen until not long before you were actually having to get in the car. But would you change your approach kind of going into a weekend based on the track, given how different these conditions are in the Extreme E races?
Yeah, I think in Chile, I was actually asking a lot before because I knew I was going to do the race. So I was like, oh, is it going to be like rocks? Is it going to be like a lot of dust? Like trying to get some information about it. And trying to prepare as much as possibly can. And I was ready for it because I heard it was going to be some big jumps. I was ready for going to be some big jumps. And I was really looking forward to the jumps because I love to jump when I'm done, done motocross and stuff. So I really enjoy jumping. So the pace was actually really good in Chile. I was just a bit unlucky with drive shaft that broke, and the crazy race as well when we had the wrong map, so we had too much power on the rear and too little on the front. So it was more like a rear wheel drive than four wheel drive. So yeah. But it happens, and I think the pace and the, like, when you saw the times, like, we had the pace, just, but I think it was, good anyways,
Certainly, and every team has had their moments of bad luck, whether it's a windscreen wiper or a safety net or a harness, every team has had those moments of bad luck. But like you said, the pace was there and we could absolutely see that. You guys are absolutely hitting some amazing times, and that track just was incredible to watch you guys driving on. But a big part, of course, with Extreme E is the environmental component, environmental awareness as well. So where we talk a lot about sustainability and climate change awareness. You come from an extremely beautiful part of the world where the natural environment is part of what makes it so incredibly special. What does climate awareness mean to you?
I think actually for me, before Extreme E, I didn't think or actually you have seen like on TV and stuff, but you didn't think so much about it. And thinking, oh, it's such a beautiful place. Like, it doesn't have, like, when I was traveling to Saudi, you can see all the trash and plastic all over the place, like in the streets and stuff. But in Norway, it's not like that. It's really clean and you don't think of it the same. Yeah. So, like, when we were in Greenland with Extreme, I think that was really like something that really, then I felt like, yeah, it's really happening with the ice caps. When you can see what's melting, I could see from some pictures from last year at the race site, you could see, yeah, it's happening fast. And yeah, it was incredible to see Greenland at the same time, but it was sad to, yeah, see it happening so fast.
It is definitely, I think, quite eye-opening, you know, when you go to these places and you're not used to it. You know, very similar where I'm from in Tasmania, it's most beautiful wilderness. And then when I came to cities, it was very, very different. And you see a lot of these things for the first time. Does it make you change any of your practices? And do you think about, you know, what each individual can do to try and make a difference?
Yeah, I think actually I've been more aware of it after Extreme E and just trying to, you know, with the trash to put in a different cans and, you know, just the small things that you can do for the environment. And I think we, like my generation, is going to be, yeah, experiencing it. And I think, like, from, I have a little sister and I can see that they are much more aware of it than we were in school. And like, they have so much more learning about that than we had. And I think that's great.
Yes, the awareness and education side of things is so, so important. And another pillar, again, topic that we talk about in the context of Extreme E is, of course, gender equality and equal opportunities. We're talking here about motorsport. What has it been what has it been like to connect with other women who are driving on the world stage and learn from them?
Yeah, I think that's great, because sometimes it can be a bit more scary to talk with the boys, maybe. So I think like I've been with Jamie Chadwick, and I think that's really great because she's an incredible driver that's done the women's series and champion. And I think, yeah, it's great to be with someone in Veloce that has, yeah, so much experience, and we can learn different things from them. And then I had with Emma as well, and I think Russia had some different drivers now, so they learned from many girls like Emma and Jamie and Christine as well. So, yeah, it's nice to see different women in the motorsport doing different stuff and just see how they work and, yeah, learn from them, because, yeah, and the same with the boys as well, to learn from them.
Are there drivers who you look up to? They don't necessarily have to be Extreme E drivers, so don't feel pressure to say any one of your competitors. But are there drivers who you look up to, who inspires you?
It's definitely Sebastian Loeb and Nasa, I think, because Sebastian Loeb is just, yeah, incredible driving. And same as Carlos Sainz, it's hard to choose someone, but I think maybe, yeah, Nasa, because thinking like, because I'm new Dakar, and I'm looking more on Nasa, maybe because he's, yeah, doing so great in Dakar and off-road, like cross-country rally. And yeah, I think that's great. I know Sebastian Loeb is doing as well, and and Carlos, and I think it's really hard to choose. Yeah, looking up to many of them, I think, yeah.
I'll let you choose three. They're great choices, so it's all right. You can have three inspirations up there. So you've been keeping pretty busy since Chile. Tell us about how you've been keeping your driving skills sharp and obviously keeping yourself strong as well in case you have to drive the Odyssey again with no power steering. What does a week in the life of Hedda look like at the moment?
Yeah, no, the week before I had did a lot of training. I did actually a fitness competition. I got second place actually, so I'm happy with that. And yeah, just working out a lot. Been walking a lot. I'm trying to get some sun because it's depressing now. It's like dark all the day now because, yeah, the winter is coming, you know, right? So, yeah, and I did go for a Coast Guard test in Oslo this weekend because I'm doing the RX150 in Lydenhill. Mm-hmm. Just preparing for that. I think there was the closest I could get, the Coast Guard Extreme in Norway. So it's great to do a test there. And yeah, I did some rally note training as well when I was in Oslo with my driving trainer. So yeah.
Keeping you very busy. What's it like to come home after such a big event like an Expree, coming and connecting with those, I suppose, more local events? What's it like coming home after a big event and reconnecting with those types of events?
Yeah, it's a bit crazy because you are like in this incredible place in the world, and then you come home and it's like, oh, it's the same. It's like really weird to go from that to just home normally now. But at the same time, it's good because then we can just relax and then get ready for what's to come next. And yeah,
spend some time recouping, getting some energy back. I'm sure it's a very exhausting process. Mm-hmm. You've mentioned that you're keen to race Dakar. What are some of your other career goals? What do you want to achieve in motorsport?
I think for me, since I'm just 21, I think to do just a lot of races, to drive more, just drive as much as possible. And I think, and of course, Dakar Rally is my biggest dream to, yeah. I think also Baja and do cross country rally, just have more off-road experience because I've just had rallycross and not so much off-road experience and driving. But after Extreme E and stuff like that, I think that's what I want to do more off-road and, yeah, of course, making a living out of motorsport. But yeah, that's what I'm trying to do.
Something tells me that you will go a long way, Hedda. Thank you so much for joining me. We look forward to seeing what you do next. I can't wait to see you racing alongside Carlos one day, perhaps in Dakar. Who knows?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much to Hedda Hussos for the chat, and also to Veloce and to JBXE. It's such a special part of this sport that we get to see up-and-comers racing on the world stage alongside legends of motorsport. And what an incredible attitude from Hedda, an absolute sponge learning from every opportunity and experience. I certainly can't wait to see what she does next. If you're enjoying listening to Extreme E Off Track, please consider leaving a rating or review. If you're on Spotify, you can leave a 5-star rating on the mobile app, and the same on Apple Podcasts, along with a written review. And of course, make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss a thing. But that's it from me. Until next time.